When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Good morning, happy Friday to you. Welcome into a new day here on the program. Great to be back with you, and thanks to Paul Santos for filling in for me yesterday. And I'm glad that I took the day off because I set my alarm. I got home at like 1 a.m. from the Green Day concert at Fenway. Set my alarm for 7:30. Woke up. Used the bathroom, went back to sleep. I said, I can sleep like another hour. Woke up at 9:30 instead of 8:30, then went back to sleep again after that and didn't wake up until 11. And then got up, showered, came in and worked here till after 6 p.m. So I still put in a full day. But I couldn't figure out why was I so tired? I didn't drink. I didn't really have to walk a whole lot. We walked from the Kenmore station to Fenway to my seat, and then from there a couple blocks after to a friend's car that gave us a ride back to the T station, and that was it. So why was I so tired? And then I remembered, I was awake for 21 straight hours. That might have been why I was so tired. So it's a good thing that Paul was in, because I would have been a disaster if I was on the air yesterday. Probably wouldn't have made any sense and rambled on about things that weren't important. Oh, wait, so it would have been like any other show. All right, well, then never mind. So, but yes, thank you, Paul, for filling in. And he'll be stepping in for me at the end of the month when I head over. Well, not, it's a week after next. I'll be heading out to the Michigan Paracon, which this is the final Michigan Paracon from the duo that puts it on, and they don't know what's going to happen with the future of it. Somebody else may take it over. If they do, I don't know if they'll invite me, so this could be the last time that I head out to Michigan, but I'm excited because this year I get to present Ghosts of the Bridgewater Triangle on the stage at the Kawaden Casino, where they hold this. I was supposed to do it last year, but a tornado that came through the Detroit airport forced us to sleep on the floor of the airport overnight, and we couldn't fly out until the next morning to Sault Ste. Marie. And so I didn't get there in time. And they never found another time slot that worked to put me on, so I get to do it this year instead. So I'm very excited to share the story of our weird little corner of the world here with a national and international audience at the biggest Paracon in the country. So, and of course, I've been talking with some libraries and booking some dates. So I'll be talking about Ghosts of the South Coast and Ghosts of the Bridgewater Triangle all over the place this fall. I'm also trying to push Presidential Paranormal, my presentation on the hauntings at the White House, because it's an election year and it's relevant. So if you want your library to book me, tell the library director or the programs manager to reach out to me. And these are always great. They're always free for you to attend, so. But yeah, feel much better now after sleeping in yesterday. We've got a lot that we can talk about today. We're actually going to be joined for the second time this week by Jack Splane as we are shifting on our Turning on the Light segment to Fridays, at least for, you know, the tennis season. Now that Jack is semi-retired, as he has been telling us, his plan is to play more tennis, and Mondays are a big tennis day, whereas Fridays are not, so he asked if we could make the switch. So we're going to have him come in today, which is timely because he has a new column up at newbedfordlight.org on the segregation of New Bedford schools. And we'll get into that with Jack about what that means. We can also talk about the new editor over at The Light. And we can get Jack's thoughts on what will probably be the big story of the day today. The full 19-page report released by the Bristol County District Attorney's Office yesterday afternoon regarding last December's fatal shooting of former New Bedford Acting Fire Chief Paul Kadare Jr. If you remember when that occurred, it seemed even then that the way the situation played out was relatively clear. There were still questions, but we knew what happened. We knew that Paul Kadare had been drinking. We knew that he had become agitated while at the Bayside Lounge in Fairhaven. We knew that he had gotten into an argument with friends about whether or not he could drive home. That he pulled out his gun. That when police arrived, he had a standoff with police. He basically told police that he had a gun and that he was going to shoot himself or they were going to shoot him. And then eventually he fired upon the police officers. They fired back, striking and killing him. But this report, and you can read the entire report at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. I wrote a story that I will say summarizes it, but it's still a pretty lengthy piece. But it does, I did try to summarize the key points as best I could. Because in the 19-page report, you get a lot of, I won't say repetition, what you get is corroboration. So one witness describing what they saw, another witness describing what they saw. So I tried to pick out some of the most important quotes from all of those sections. But in the story toward the end, there's a link to the entire full report. So if you want to read it in its entirety, you can do so. But basically, this report suggests, and I should point out, it's actually the witnesses that suggest that are cited in this report, that Paul Kadare was upset because he got word while he was at the Bayside Lounge that the city of New Bedford was appealing the Civil Service Commission's decision to require the city to continue to pay his pension. If you don't recall, Kadare had been named acting fire chief in 2018. He was later fired in 2022 because he had gone out on a work-related injury. He had problems with his back. He had a work-related injury. And then the city had caught wind that this might not be legitimate, or they had reason to believe that it was not legitimate. And they hired a private investigator to follow him and to document his activity. And the private investigator caught video footage of Kadare loading a heavy grill onto the back of his pickup truck. And the city used this as a along with, you know, other reasons, but as the prime reason for firing him, for saying, hey, you're out here collecting injury pay, saying that you can't work, but you can go and move heavy grills. So they fired him. And then they fought not to have to pay his pension. And so he appealed that. He won. The Civil Service Commission called his firing unlawful. And that had happened shortly before all of this incident went down. The morning of this, the morning of December 29th, 2023, Paul Kodera met up with a fellow fire chief for breakfast at Jake's Diner in Fairhaven. And that fire chief said that he was in a good mood, that Kodera was happy that he had won his appeal and that he was going to be getting his pension. After breakfast, they then moved over to the Bayside Lounge, which was a regular thing. The Bristol County Fire Chiefs Association would all meet there on Fridays for lunch and drinks, which is not an uncommon thing. A lot of chiefs get together once a week. I know somebody who is a former fire chief in another town, and they get together every Friday morning for coffee. So it's not an uncommon thing. So they were out having lunch. Kodera got word that the city was appealing his win regarding the pension, and then he became agitated and upset. And the details of what these witnesses provide can give us insight into his mental state. And in fact, his wife even told investigators from the DA's office that she believes Paul Kodera had a psychotic break. That she believes that he was acting out of character. And there's a couple of reasons. She said, you know, obviously the situation with the city had taken a toll on him, but that also he had started, he had been recently told that he couldn't have any more surgeries for his back problems, and that he had started undergoing pain management therapy, and they had changed his prescriptions, and his new prescriptions had made him more agitated. But as they were sitting there having drinks at the Bayside Lounge, a witness who is a former New Bedford fire chief told the investigators that, quote, at some point during lunch, Mr. Kodera ordered a round of Jameson shots and stated it was in memory of a former Somerset Fire Department chief. That chief died from a suicide in January 2020. So they're seemingly indicating here that as early as the first round of drinks, Kodera already had suicide on his mind. Maybe not his own, but he was certainly thinking about this former fire chief. Then by 3 p.m. and after a few more drinks, Kodera ordered another round of shots. And that's when this former fire chief, former New Bedford fire chief, contacted Kodera's wife and said, quote, he would need help getting home due to his drinking and his mental state. Another witness, the one who had gone to breakfast with Kodera, said that Kodera received a call from his attorney during lunch that the city was appealing the civil service decision, and it caused Kodera to get, quote, a little pissed off. And so now he's already upset about that call. His wife arrives to take him home. He's upset that somebody called his wife. As they're sitting there, his wife removes his keys from his pocket when he's not looking to make sure that he can't drive. When it comes time to leave, Kodera's upset that his wife wants to drive him home. He thinks he can drive himself home. I will point out here that the autopsy and the toxicology report revealed that his blood alcohol content at that time, now keep in mind, 0.08 is considered legally too drunk to drive. Cordero had a blood alcohol content of 0.202. So he definitely should not have been driving. However, when he got to his truck, because he didn't have his keys, he punched out the window of his truck to try to get to the spare keys he kept inside. Then the witness who came out, the fire chief that came out, who was not the one who called his wife, came out to try to calm him down. And he accused him of being the one to call his wife, started strangling him, throwing him up against the broken window of the truck. Eventually, he let him go. The other witness came out. The other fire chief came out. They're trying to talk him down. He's yelling at them. He's clearly upset. He took out his gun, which he was licensed to carry, and pointed it at his wife. And then when his friend said, hey, put your gun away, he fired a shot into the air. Eventually, the police arrive because someone called the police to say they had a drunken patron who was trying to drive home. Police were called. They show up. They see Cordero take an aggressive stance. And he begins making statements even before they arrived, like, we're all going to die today. This is how it ends. And when the police got there, he was saying, making similar statements to them, you know, either I'm going to shoot myself or you're going to shoot me. And his wife said this was uncharacteristic for him. The toxicology report revealed no other substances in his system. So he just became upset, seemingly by that phone call, that the city was appealing the decision to have to reinstate his pension. So we don't know, obviously, with, you know, mental health, it's hard to diagnose in hindsight, but we don't know how long this had been eating at him, how long this had been building up to him, building up within him. But this report, without saying as much, points to that as being the thing that set him off, combined with, you know, this pain medication, combined with obviously an afternoon spent drinking. The police arrive. As I said, he's making statements that, you know, suicidal statements. They try to talk him down. That fails. They tried non-lethal measures. Those failed. We're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we can get into exactly how the police tried to de-escalate the situation and tried to get to the point where they could subdue him without issue, and then it came to a use of force. So hang on. We will get into all of that. But again, you can read the complete story on the complete report, 508. You can read this complete story on the complete report at the website, WBSM.com, and on the app. But we'll take your calls on a 508-996-0500, app chat, and open line voicemails in the WBSM app. We'll be right back. And welcome back in. We will continue with the discussion about the fatal shooting of former New Bedford acting fire chief Paul Cordero coming up after the news, because there's a little bit more that I want to get into regarding what led up to the police having to fire their weapons and how this investigation by the Bristol County District Attorney's Office was able to clear them of any wrongdoing and to prove that the shooting was justified. So we'll get into that and more. And of course, we'll take your calls, 508-996-0500, your app chat messages and your open line voicemails too. But right now it's time to go into the newsroom and get all of the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
What's left of Debbie makes its way to New England. What you can expect: a third death in a national listeria outbreak, and a very special day for Smokey Bear.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
The Northeast is bracing for Tropical Depression Debbie. The former hurricane currently spreading heavy rain and strong winds across the mid-Atlantic, where over 17 million people have been under a tornado watch. The death toll from Debbie is now up to 7, with Debbie expected to dump up to 4 inches of rain today from Pennsylvania all the way up here to New England. Your full forecast is coming up. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz will campaign in the battleground state of Arizona today. The vice president and the Minnesota governor are holding a rally in Glendale. Former President Donald Trump says he drew a bigger crowd on January 6, 2021 than Martin Luther King did during his 1963 I Have a Dream speech. Tammy Trujillo reports.
At a news conference Thursday from Mar-a-Lago, Trump was asked if there would be a peaceful transfer of power after the November election. And the former president insisted there was a peaceful transfer after he lost in 2020. Trump then said, quote, "We actually had more people that day than when King delivered his iconic speech." The Congressional January 6th committee put Trump's crowd at an estimated 53,000 people, whereas MLK's speech at the Lincoln Memorial was witnessed by about 250,000 people. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A third person is dead from a listeria outbreak that originated in deli meat. Boar's Head recently recalled 7 million pounds of meat products following two other listeria deaths, one in New Jersey and one in Illinois. On Thursday, the CDC announced a third person had died from the listeria outbreak in Virginia. The total number of sick people has risen to 43 across over a dozen states. Today marks the 10-year anniversary of the fatal police shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. The 18-year-old unarmed black man was shot 6 times by a Ferguson police officer, leading to protests against police brutality in Ferguson and around the country. A federal investigation later cleared the officer of wrongdoing. California Governor Gavin Newsom wants cities and counties to step up removing homeless encampments and says he'll withhold funds from those who don't. The governor signed an executive order last month giving local governments the authority to get rid of the encampments and ticket homeless people for camping in public. On Thursday, he was personally out with crews in the Mission Hills community clearing an encampment. And today is the birthday of the best friend to the forest. Bree Tennis with more on Smokey Bear's big day.
Smokey Bear's tale is a sad one. Orphaned as a young cub by a wildfire, he dedicated his life to preventing them. Over the years, he's become quite popular. The Ad Council says 8 out of 10 people recognize him. In fact, he's so popular, he even has his own zip code. And if you write to him, you'll become a junior forest ranger. They're Smokey merchandise that generates millions every year, which Smokey uses for wildfire prevention. And that's where you come in.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Happy 80th birthday, Smokey Bear. I'm Bree Tennis.
WBSM Sports.
Well, the New England Patriots beat the Carolina Panthers in their preseason opener at Gillette Stadium last night, 17-3. Next home game is Thursday with the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Red Sox are scheduled to play home tonight, Boston hosting the Houston Astros for a 3-game series at Fenway Park.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Remnants from what was Hurricane Debbie making a presence across our immediate region, bringing with it a high surf advisory. 8 p.m. tonight through tomorrow evening, a high rip current risk from this morning through this evening at 8 p.m. This morning, patchy fog, cloudy, humid, temperature in the mid-70s with scattered showers. Scattered showers will continue this afternoon, upper 70s, and conditions will continue to deteriorate overnight. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ceci Del Carmen on New Bedford News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM news update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
Welcome back in. That song is from the 90s when Gregorian Chants could become a top 40 hit. It was a wild time for music. So getting back into the circumstances of the fatal shooting of former New Bedford Acting Fire Chief Paul Cordaire Jr. And again, we have the full report available for you at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. But I'd kind of left off where the police were trying to de-escalate the situation by talking Cordaire down, having friends talk him down. Neither of those worked. So then they tried to deploy non-lethal weapons, non-lethal means of subduing him. So at first, they attempted to taser him. And the first and second attempt to tase him didn't work because he just pulled the probes off of his body. So it was late December. He was wearing a sweatshirt. Perhaps the taser probes didn't deploy far enough into a sweatshirt. So he was able to pull them off. Then they attempted to use a bolo wrap, which is basically something that would have tied around him. And that missed the mark. An officer had a rifle that shoots beanbag projectiles. They shot him with the beanbag. And according to the report, that had, quote, little to no effect. And then that rifle failed on subsequent attempts to fire another beanbag round. I don't know how common it is for them to have issues with those weapons failing to fire beanbags. But all of these attempts failed, and before they could try something else, Cordaire pulled his weapon and fired at police. He struck in a cushion a police officer in the leg. That officer was okay, but he got shot in the leg. And that's when four officers opened fire on Cordaire, striking him five times. So now the Bristol County District Attorney's Office has to determine whether or not to charge any of those police officers with a crime if they find that they were not justified. So they started this review. They started this investigation, spoke to witnesses, spoke to the two fire chiefs that were with Cordaire. Two of the fire chiefs that were with Cordaire. They spoke to his wife. They spoke to all the police officers that were involved. They reviewed dash cam footage from a Fairhaven police cruiser. They reviewed body cam footage from a Mattapoisett police officer, and they reviewed cell phone footage from someone who was at the scene filming, going back to Cordaire breaking the window of his truck. So they had numerous videos, numerous eyewitness testimonies. They also went through the use of force policy for the Fairhaven, Acushnet, and Mattapoisett police departments, as well as the state's self-defense law. And in all of that investigation, after all of that investigation, they came away with the determination that the shooting was justified and that there was no crime committed by the officers. I think most people, when they heard about this situation, knew that that would be the case. The man opened fire on police officers outside of a bar where there was numerous other people outside, where there were people inside. The risk of danger, even if Cordaire kept saying he had no intention of hurting anybody but himself, the risk of danger to others warranted these actions. So the story here really isn't necessarily that that it was found justified, because most people expected that would be the case. It's more the details of what went on. And now some will say, well, you've got to hold the city of New Bedford and perhaps even Mayor Mitchell partly responsible for this. Because if it was the city's appeal of the decision to award him his pension that set him off, then they must be at least partially at fault. But I don't think you can say that, because the city can't make a decision like that, whether you think it was the right or wrong decision. But they can't make that decision based on what they think the person's personal reaction to it is. And they certainly can't make the decision based on whether or not they think the person is going to go out and get drunk and do harm to themselves because they're upset about it. So I've felt from the beginning that this was, yes, it was a terrible situation, but you can't put the blame on the city for just doing what they thought was the right course of action for somebody that they thought was trying to defraud the taxpayers. Now, I've seen a counter argument that says, well, if you're upset about the fact that he was taking time off for injury, collecting a paycheck while out injured, but yet able to move a heavy grill, and even that, I remember when that story broke, even that, I was like, is that indicative that there isn't more ongoing problems? Because there's a difference between your back hurting all the time and your back being prone to hurting. If I'm a firefighter, I would not want to go into a situation. I mean, I had a firefighter in my family that had, you know, nagging chronic injuries. You don't want somebody that goes into a fire to suddenly have back spasms and not be able to throw somebody over their shoulder and carry them out, or, you know, do what they need to do to assist a fellow firefighter in getting out safely or getting themselves out safely. So there's a difference between, okay, my back isn't hurting today, I think I can put this grill in the back of the truck by myself, versus let me go run into a burning building and hopefully my back doesn't seize up on me while I'm in there. It was probably a calculated risk that Codera took, thinking, do I need to get somebody to help me with this? No, my back feels okay today, but if I throw it out, putting it up there, at least I don't have to go run into a burning building tomorrow because I'm out on injury leave. But the question that comes up from a lot of people was, even if you feel that you were justified in firing him for that, does that negate all the years of service he put in to earn that pension? So I think anything that you do that's misconduct puts your pension at risk. I don't know the exact terminology of the firefighter's contract, but I would assume that if you are caught defrauding, and in the eyes of the city, that's what he was doing, then yeah, your pension would be ruled ineligible. And I think that's the ground that they thought that they could stand on in this situation. The Civil Service Commission disagreed. They were in the process of appealing it. I've seen some folks who have commented saying that they hope that this appeal has now been dropped and that Cordero's wife will be able to receive his pension, but I don't know any details on that. But we will see what we can find out. 508-996-0500. App chat and open line voicemails on the WBSM app. I've got to take a break here. We will be back in a few moments. And welcome back in. 508-996-0500. That is the number to call in and chime in if you want to discuss. The big news of the day is the release of this 19-page report from the Bristol County DA's office regarding the shooting death of Paul Kodair Jr. at the hands of police last December in Fairhaven outside the Bayside Lounge. But another bit of news yesterday, and you heard Phil talking about this earlier in the newscast, is that the city of New Bedford held a press conference yesterday to talk about their upgraded hurricane policies. And that's especially poignant with the remnants of Debbie coming up this weekend. It's not going to be too bad for us. Certainly not a hurricane, but it's been a while. And the old Swamp Yankees would say, we're due for a hurricane. So it's important that they've been able to update and upgrade their hurricane procedures. And the city is very proactive on this. As Mayor Mitchell has told us many times, they don't just depend on the television forecasts. They have their own subscription to a forecasting service that Mayor Mitchell characterizes more accurate than the TV meteorologists. And so they are ahead of this information all the time. They are planning and strategizing. And I think that's why you see good response when it comes to a hurricane. 508-996-0500. Let's take a quick call here. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Is that me?
Only you know for sure, but it sounds like you.
Yeah, true. I'm glad you pointed out the problem with back injuries and disabilities being tricky. I got in a car accident, and I was not at fault. Driver was on ice in Fall River, hit my car. So I was supposed to have surgery on it, but wanted to avoid it, knowing that further damage could occur to your back by removing vertebrae, discs, etc. But anyway, I was able to go to Charlton Memorial back school. They had a program back then of 6 weeks, 2 hours a week. And basically, I learned a lot about how to avoid getting hurt. But ironically, one of the things they recommended to various people in the class was to, if they could, without endangering themselves, some people would benefit by weightlifting to get as much muscle around your back problems to protect yourself, although that could be risky. And I also learned that factories and industries did not want to hire anybody who could work but was at risk of having on-the-job injury that could end up injuring other people, like loading trucks, etc.
Sure, yeah.
I once did. So I felt very bad that the mayor was trying to make an example of this guy, perhaps to ward off people who might try to imitate faking disability. But when you're disabled, people cannot rely upon you, even if you want to take chances loading trucks or whatever. You use the word spasm. It's just a case of the fact that you are an unreliable worker, and you well explained how a fireman could endanger other people. So I don't know why the mayor picked on this guy, but yes, he has some moral responsibility for overreacting in that incident and causing other people to insult that fireman with accusations. And it's very tragic, and I hope the mayor learned a lesson from it, but he seems rather obtuse about other people suffering, for example, the homeless people.
All right, well, thank you for the call. I got to hold you there to take a break, but you have a great day and a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, we got to take this break. We will be right back. All right, that's going to do it for this hour. Stay tuned for the news. When we come back in the next hour, we'll have another hour to discuss whatever's on your mind at 508-996-0500. Then in the 8 o'clock hour, Jack Splane will join us for...
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.